Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of It's Related. I promise. We gotta do that again because Magunga needs to. We didn't brief Magunga.
Yeah. You didn't.
We didn't. Yeah, sorry. I just realized. And this
is a regular.
This is a regular.
Okay.
So that is on us. Allow us to do that again. All right, are we ready?
Ready.
Okay. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of It's Related. I promise. We're here again with another amazing episode. We are kind of full house today with our amazing guests. If you're wondering if we planned the outfits, we absolutely did. We gave a color.
Yeah, a color scheme.
Just a color scheme because from the first few episodes with Sharon, we realized we are automatically matching without planning. And then we said, oh my God, what if we always match?
Yeah.
And then we're like, is it corny? Is it weird? And you were like, no.
Let's do it.
So for as long as we can, we will match.
Yeah, period.
Speaking of, we actually would love to have a fashion collaborator and partner. If you want us to wear your clothes, if you're African, if you're Kenyan, and you want us to wear your clothes during our
shoots.
Yeah. Please just reach out to us either on DM or in the comment section and we shall get back to you.
Yep.
Let me start by introducing our amazing guests. Let me start by introducing myself.
Yeah.
I am your host for today. My name is Jules, also known as Jules Her on Instagram. You can also find me on my own podcast, So This Is Love, available on Spotify or wherever you find your podcast. Shameless plug. And then to my right, we have the voice of the man who everyone,
literally
you guys, have been wanting to see. You're like, where is this guy? How does he look like? Oh my God, he's so sexy.
Yeah, he is
a sex symbol.
Such disappointment.
Absolutely not. We like the black hair. It's called the what?
salt and pepper, you know, bald heads.
Please introduce yourself to our audience.
Well, hello everyone, my name is Dez and wonderful to be back on IRIP.
Karibu. This is Dez, guys. This is the guy finally. I am always at loggerheads with. Which was only one episode.
It was just one. Yeah.
Not loggerheads.
Is it log?
No, how would you describe it?
See, this is how we start.
Yeah, not loggerheads. The head of the logger.
Healthy banter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Intellectual banter.
Intellectual banter. And to my left, we have the one and only, the magnificent, the also eloquent,
and does he
intelligent, the one and only, the Magunga. Magunga, please introduce yourself. Where can we find commotion? You? Who are you?
I'm Magunga Williams. I am a digital storyteller. I started writing and then delved into photography and videography.
Yeah. And where can people find you?
Social media, mostly Instagram and TikTok, Twitter as well, by the handles The Magunga.
The Magunga.
All right, I love it.
Yes.
And to my furthest right.
Yes, and I'm Sharon, aka Shazo, and I am Julia's co-host, co-founder. And so excited to have this conversation because it's been a long time coming and a lot to share. A lot to be discussed. So, welcome, everyone.
All right. So, I want us to kick off this conversation. This is a conversation of... It's something I've been wanting to discuss for a very, very, very long time. I just didn't know how to go about it because I've experienced, if you can't already tell from the title of the episode, we are going to be talking about intertribal relationships or marriages. And just what that looks like for us from our perspective, especially because the country we live in is plagued by tribalism, and there are usually a lot of tensions that exist between the idea of marrying somebody from another tribe, especially if they're from a different tribal grouping, like Bantu, Nilot kind of thing. And I have been in that situation in the past. But I do have to put a small disclaimer that this, because to me, this is a very sensitive topic. These are opinions based on our personal experiences.
Yeah.
Right. Basically that's what we'll be talking about. Mm-hmm. But in true IRIP fashion, first and foremost, we start the conversation with what's caught our attention okay, in the recent past, maybe on your way here, something true you can tell us. I want us to start with the guests, because if me and Sharon start, it'll become a podcast of its own.
Truly.
Yeah. So the Magunga.
Yeah.
What's caught your attention?
Well, we were shooting for some brand, and while shooting, we were doing this thing for Evolution of Music. From the 70s when you used to use vinyl, and then not 70s and before, really.
I love that stuff you do on IG,
Instagram.
Thank
the storytelling for
So it was vinyl, then cassettes, then CDs, then streaming. So while we were shooting, what struck me was just how technology was meant to bring us together, but really when I think with music, it kind of like pulled us apart, because with physical music, you guys had to meet, you and your friends had to meet to enjoy music. It's one of the things that used to pull people together. If you're meeting at record stores, if you're bringing a record over, or a CD or a tape or whatever it is, because you couldn't possibly own all of them. So there were the ones that you could own, and then some.
Somebody has something you don't have.
When we're doing the streaming era, it's sending a link. You know, yes, I'll just send you a Spotify link or a YouTube link. So if you were to meet, probably it has to be a bit more intentional, or if you meet at a concert, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But the era of physical music used to be a point of connection. That was quite interesting, I thought.
Yeah. And even it's also that irony exists throughout technology, I think, because it's the same thing like with, you know, all these connecting apps, the Facebooks, the Instagrams, whatever, they do bring people together, yes. But what happens is that even when you're together physically, everyone is still in those apps connecting to other people. It's an irony.
And then even then, you'd think that because you are on the same WhatsApp group with someone, then you know how they're doing, or you feel like you're in touch, so you can go for months without seeing someone. But since you talk on WhatsApp and then you follow each other on social media, then you feel like you are connected.
False but familiarity.
Not quite. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. I love that. Dez, what's caught your attention of late?
Nothing that creative.
Really. I know. You don't want to go after Magunga.
It doesn't have to be.
That's a tough one to follow up on. But I would just say it's the disgruntledness and inability of Kenyans to ever be satisfied with anything. First, we had a Kenya shilling that was plummeting against the dollar and the euro, and people were like, oh, this country, this, that, and the other. Then the shilling gains value. Why? It falls.
Me and those people there.
Yeah, I'm losing money. It's like, what do you want? What is it that's going to make you happy?
And it's Decisions were made, bro. Decisions were made when it was.
Yeah, when it starts falling 7 bob a day. Then you find that people are not happy, and you realize that happiness for people is really a state of mind, because no matter which way the economic climate changes, there's still going to be disgruntled people. Mm-hmm. So that's always very interesting to me, is how that and the taxation in our country, how people are really feeling the effects and how people are really upset. And it's not just from a certain economic class, it's everyone who's being funneled into the system and being digitized with e-tims, and you have to have a receipt. If you don't, it's there. People are wanting to go back to a cash system. It's interesting that your last interview was on digital banking systems, and now you find with our taxation, people are running back to cash because they're like, the tax man is on my neck.
Yeah, that's so true.
So in the last week or two, you find that people from different stratas of society are so disgruntled, and they're having to be adopted and onboarded into digital platforms in order to get tax breaks, this, that, and the other. And it's they almost want to throw their hands up.
Yeah.
So that's my two
bob. Interesting. Mine, I don't know that it's that macroeconomic. It's actually very macroeconomic. It's about me. So this morning I was very angry. Some stuff happened. And I always say to my friends or people around me that I get angry maybe once or twice a year. Like, you know, that like enraged, like that sort of anger. Like, I'm very slow. Right. Okay, it wasn't wrath. It wasn't that crazy. But I'm slow to anger as a person. But this morning I was very angry. And I sat down with myself when the situation kind of boils down, and I realized that when I'm angry, I cry. And I was just curious, mm-hmm. like, how do people react when they're angry? Because it made me feel a little weak. Like, I was like, am I weak for crying when I'm angry? Like, I feel like I felt like I should have demonstrated a stronger anger to the person that angered me. But I was just very much like, okay, well, I'm upset. Yes, you've upset me, but I just was like,
you're such a dignified way to get angry.
I felt like I was so
a way of expressing your disappointment without it being aggressive. It's strength.
Oh, thank you.
It's true.
But I just felt like the person probably does not understand how angry I am.
Yes.
And I think that leaves room for them to anger me again.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I feel like if I had the demeanor of like people who get angry and they're like pissed, then you're not gonna like mess with them anymore. So I just remember thinking like, man, do I need to learn to show anger in a more efficient way so that people don't mess with me? Because I just wanted to cry. Like, I was just like holding back tears versus holding back, you know, like an explosive reaction. So that caught my attention, and I was like, damn, maybe is there a way to be angry that helps you versus the one that maybe doesn't? So food for thought.
And why did you start by saying that was not a big thing? That's deep.
Oh, sorry, babes. I know you had a tough morning.
Yeah, this morning was...
Especially you. We all did, but you had a tough mm-hmm. morning.
Yeah.
Pole lakini.
And it's a dignified day. I wish I could say like, oh, you know, when I get angry, I just cry.
Like, yeah, I feel like anger is... That's the...
I was like, excuse me, what did you say?
Do I need to channel... I was like... But I was just like,
yeah,
I'm so upset.
No, but I do get it. There's sometimes I get so angry, I cry. And you have to let it out.
Cause yeah.
I think I read or listened to a podcast recently talking about tears having some cortisol in them. You know, which is what? The stress hormone.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to cry, release it. Mm-hmm. Let it come out of your body. It's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would rather have a crying response to whatever happened than an explosive response. I always have to manage my responses. Especially if somebody fucks me over, I'm like, excuse me.
I wish I
put it together. Could, people, I wish so I that I could.
It's somewhere culture in between. That tells you that tears are a sign of weakness when it's not. It is in other cultures, tears would be the sign of real disappointment and whatever, and strength and resilience and holding, being able to express it without it being disastrous in that regard. So I wouldn't look at it as any form of, just change your cultural perspective.
Fair enough.
Yeah. You don't need to shout, babe.
Yeah.
So here's what caught my attention. As per usual, it's related, I promise. So the other day, I did a quick ad on my stories for, it's not an ad, it was maybe like a call out. A friend of mine had a bunch of kittens, and she's like, Juice, please help me look for homes for these kittens. And I posted, and I got a lot of responses. So one of these ladies was like, hey, I'm interested. My name is so-and-so. And then she came back like 2 hours later. Oh, wait, sorry. She came back like 2 hours later saying, oh, sorry, my name is so-and-so. This is my pseudo account, but here's my number. So this person can get into contact with me. And it had me thinking like about pseudo accounts and why people have pseudo accounts. And I want to know if, especially let's say Magunga and Sharon, who are already in this public space, do you have a pseudo account? Because from my understanding, people have banner accounts or pseudo accounts so that they can scroll through the internet and like and comment, but it's not official Sharon Mashira or it's not Jules Ha and it's not the Magunga. But I've never gotten a pseudo account because the only times I've felt the temptation or the urge to get a pseudo account is when I see somebody trolling me and I'm like, I wish I could go back to this comment and really say what I think.
Responding to
your page, I'm like, you're such a do nothing, first of all. Okay, that's what our high school teacher used to say. You're a do nothing. Yeah, she used to call us do nothings. Anyway, I'm like, you're such a do nothing, and you're here talking to me. You're not creating shit, and you have hella opinions. And then I would stop myself because I'm like, I'll do that.
Then it's your name.
not my name. Mm-hmm. And then I have that energy with me, that anger. Like, I'm just an angry... So every time something happens, I'm like, let me use my studio account. And I'm like, I don't want to walk with that.
Oh.
You know, anger is a burden. Let me just say that. Like, it's a... You know, so... So I, that's the only reason I haven't done it, even though I want to, so that I can hit back. I'm like, I got you, you know, even you. But yeah, I'm just worried to have that energy. Do you have a pseudo account?
I do.
What is it for? What's the purpose?
It's funny. My pseudo account is because I feel like my current feed on Official Sharon Mashira is a lot of like, it doesn't necessarily feed me. I just get to see what people are up to. So my pseudo account is, it feeds me with creativity. Like, I don't follow anyone in like the industry or in the like, it's like my safe, quiet space that has more like motivational stuff, creators that I don't know, like I don't even follow you. I don't follow any, like, I just follow, it's where I go for inspiration, let me put it that way.
Interesting.
So it's just a different approach. But also I have someone who manages my current social media account. So I feel like because of how she uses it, it doesn't, like, my feed doesn't feed me. So my pseudo account just feeds my creative side. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have one? Do you have a pseudo account?
you are who you are.
I am who I am. It's too much work.
But you know,
I feel like
with,
it's,
you know, people with pseudo accounts.
I know people who have pseudo accounts and they are not, they don't do our kind of work. It's because of the nature of their job that would not allow them to express themselves freely. So you'll find like you have a cat account or something.
Yeah.
It's, you know, so because of conflict of interest, then they create an account so that they can enjoy social media freely. But I know the ones you're talking about, the ones for creating an account so that you can,
a trolling
you can,
account.
Yeah, you
yeah.
can you can hit I, back. That's honestly, so, that's if a I have something work. To say, I'll just say it with my
with your chest.
With my name. And
yeah, I know
what shall be. I don't
know. Yeah, we know you've done that before, but we won't address that.
We won't address that. Magunga trolled us back in the day.
Are we getting into it?
So anyway, moving on.
We've grown up.
And we talked about it.
Did you talk about it?
We made a
okay,
mess.
But I didn't get a mess anyway.
It's fine.
Yeah.
So that's why I was like, really, Magunga? And then I was such a fan of his work. After that, I unfollowed blog.
Girl, we were trending on Twitter.
But you made us
trend. You made us trend on Twitter.
Like, you guys over exaggerate that.
Are you joking?
But today we are here to talk about...
Intertribal.
What are we talking about?
Yeah. Okay, guys, let's start this conversation. Oops, sorry. Can I just kick my shoe back?
Please keep that in the video.
Yeah. So I want us to talk about Esther, not her real name, and this is her story. This is a real life story. It happened to her. And for whatever reason, she just couldn't be here on the podcast. And so what we did is that I had a pre-interview with her last night, actually, and we went through this journey that she went through, and I want us to use this story to kind of kickstart this conversation.
Okay.
All right. So Esther was born and raised in Nairobi. And so what that meant for her is that she, for her, in her words, tribalism did not occur to her when she was young. She had friends from different tribal backgrounds, and do you say historical backgrounds or what? Cultural backgrounds. It was up until, and then when she got to form four, or after form four, is when she started dating seriously. Her first serious boyfriend was a guy who, I don't give him a name, but let's just say he was Luya, and actually Esther is Kamba. And that was the first time they dated for a long time. But that was the first time she said that this idea of cultural differences, like she got hit by it. You know, and that was the first time even her father or somebody in her family mentioned that, hey, if you're going to marry this person, you know, are you ready for what's about to come? But anyway, they broke up. Another reason by this, she said that she was not really seeing an issue with tribalism intertribal dating was because her parents are also from different tribes. Okay. And then a few years later, she meets the man that she ended up marrying, who was a Luo man. And remember, Esther
is smiling.
Kamba. Magunga is Luo. So,
your people.
Yes.
Yeah, he's like, damn right you.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Here we go. Yeah. For those who might not know, obviously, I mean, Luos and Kambas, the issue is usually about Luos and Kikuyus mostly in this country. But Kamba is part of the, is Kamba part of Gema?
No.
Yes.
Yes. Gikuyu, Embu, Meru.
There's no K.
Akamba.
Akamba.
Eh. Really? The Gema, yes. So, the, I mean, it's the Bantu group, eh? The big, the whatever. Anyway, in walks in her Luo boyfriend. They date. She loves him. He loves her. By this, she also wanted me to point out that she, even despite knowing what she knew a little bit about, oh, this might be an issue, tribalism was not a thing for her. Because even at the time she was working in Western, her best friend is actually, still is a Luo lady. And when they got married with Mr., what can we call him?
Omondi?
No, that is so tribalist. We call him Jonathan.
Oh.
So this guy is called Jonathan. Esther and Jonathan. Okay?
You already said it's Luo, so you can yeah. say anything.
But I don't want to be like, yeah, oh, no, it was Mwehaki and
Red.
Oh, Omondi. Like, yeah, that's very, very tribal. So I'm trying to be, that's why I've given her name balanced. Esther, and we're going to call him Jonathan, but we know okay. she was okay. Kamba and he was Luo. So she got married to Jonathan. And her best friend, who is still her best friend to date, is Luo. And her best friend told her, like, before they got married, like, babe, you are you sure, like, you want to do this? Because, like, coming to this side, I'm telling you, it's a lot.
Yeah.
And she was like, yeah, whatever. You know, this is the man she loves. It's the man she chose. So they get married. And as soon as she gives birth, she got pregnant, she got her firstborn baby, her mother-in-law moved in.
To their house, their matrimonial home.
Into their matrimonial home. Because what she was told is that it is customary for the mother-in-law to come. I don't know how true it is. Magunga is here. But to come and help, especially like, the first months, to help take care of the baby. And while she welcomed this, what she was upset about was that she was not allowed to have a... What is this Kikuyu one where we carry the baby? Is it Itara?
No, the Itara is different.
Goshogia mwana. But it's an what? It's an Itara. It's an Itega. So in Kikuyu culture, we have Itega, that Goshogia mwana, where we have the aunties who come, the mother's friends come, and they take their baby around. They hold the baby in turns as they pray and say blessing. So you're blessing the child. So she was told she can't. She was like, okay, fine. Oh, also she wanted her mom to also move in to help with the baby. But she was finding it hard to do that because her mother-in-law is in the house and she couldn't even have her Itara, okay? Anyway,
Itega.
So she lets that go. And yeah, so the mom is there, blah, 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 blah. The mother-in-law goes back to wherever she was from. The mother-in-law, her husband's side of the family, Jonathan's side of the family, did not live in Nairobi. They also didn't live in Western. They lived in another city in Nairobi, in Kenya. So let's say, not Kisumu, maybe Mombasa. Kakamega. Let's say that, yeah. A few months later, the family had a wedding in Nairobi. So they came to Nairobi and...
The family of Jonathan.
Mm-hmm. And they, when everyone went back to their homes, now Jonathan's sister, who is now Esther's sister-in-law, stayed behind. And the mom also. But the mom didn't stay for too long. She went back home, but then she left the sister-in-law there. So now the sister-in-law stayed. And then, kidogo, two brothers of Jonathan come and they stay. So she's like, she starts asking like, hey, like what's, you know, I want my home back. And basically the feedback she was getting is, in fact she was even saying, see, we can set them up in a hotel or an Airbnb or something like that. And basically what she was being told is, no, this is how we do it. Like, if you have the capacity to take care of somebody and they're in town, then you take care of them. They can come stay, and they don't have to tell you, I'm going to be out of here in 2 nights, so I'm only staying for a week. They can stay for months. And at the time, she was very upset about that because her husband used to travel a lot for work.
Oh, so
when she comes home, it's the brothers are there, they're watching football, she can't watch her shows, but she's told, but this is family now. And one particular incident that she was saying was that... was that this one day she was in the shower And I think this is after the brothers had left, everyone had left. One of her brother-in-laws came to visit, and instead of waiting for her in the sitting room after the nanny let him in, he went to the bedroom and waited for her on the bed. So she's come out of the shower, she's like, Allah. And he's like, no, just change here. We can have this discussion quickly. We have to do this. And, you know, later on when she asked about it, she was told, but you know, if you die, this brother-in-law, you will inherit. This is her story. This is, you know, the in Luo customs.
And Kikuyu.
If your husband dies, the bereaved or the widow can be inherited by the brothers. So that is what she was told. So she was like, it should not be so weird. Like, you can tell him to leave, but don't be so alarmed about it. Okay. These are just things that she was highlighting. All right. So anyway, eventually, the tensions of these cultural differences continue to just brew in the relationship. And what she struggled a lot with was that whenever she talked to her hubby is like, there's nothing I can do. And eventually their marriage ended. Now, she was very, very, is the word like specific? Like she was adamant in saying that the marriage did not end because of the cultural differences. Mm. There were a lot of other things happening in the background that caused the marriage to end. And even when she, in fact, when she was getting her divorce, she was pregnant with her second child. She didn't even wait to get to full term. But she was saying the fact that they were not able, the cultural differences made it harder, almost impossible, basically, for them to get through the tough times. And she was saying, usually when you get married, the first 2-3 years are very hard. So if you already don't have a system that works and allows for like good communication, it'll fumble. Mm. And that's basically what happened to them. So I asked her, what are her thoughts now? Like, would she do it again? How does she feel about this idea of intertribal marriages? And she said, first and foremost, she understands why a lot of parents give advice to kids the way they do. They might say, it's okay to have friends from whatever tribe, but when you're getting married, just be careful because you might go and suffer on the other side, or they'll come here and they suffer because of those cultural differences. Not that she's for it, she says she understands it. She also said that she has friends who have intertribal marriages, not only with Luo Kamba but Luo Kikuyu, and she's seen their marriages work. But the difference that she sees between those marriages and her marriage is the fact that her husband was not able to speak up for her, was not able to defend her and to kind of put her part of the decision making. She'd just be told things are happening and she's not a part of it. And I asked her, so if one of your children comes to you and says, okay, this is my person, they're from a different tribe, would you, knowing what you know, would you be against it? And she said no. But what she will tell her child or tell her daughter is, slow down. Get to understand the background of this person. Get to understand the family. And try and figure out what kind of man is this in relationship to his mother and father. Is he a daddy's boy or a mommy's boy? In the sense that he cannot say, guys, you can come visit, but you have to give us a heads up. That kind of thing. Those are the things she'd tell her child to consider. And when I asked her, would you do it again? She laughed for very long before replying. And she just said, I would basically employ the same principles, the ones I've just mentioned. She would be very cautious this time. And she would take her time completely, like whatever it takes, because she sees the challenges that arise with intertribal marriages. Mm. And that is the story of...
Can I jump in?
Esther. Feel free to jump in.
It seems to me her marital problems on a tribal level are incidental. I think her biggest problem was her man not stepping in to protect her from the things that she was seeing as the problems within the marriage that were coming from the outside, that being his extended family. So I think even if she had married a Kamba guy and her in-laws came in and infiltrated her house, she would have had the same issues. So I don't think it was a cultural thing. It's more of a thing where, as you mentioned in the latter part of your summation, that he didn't step up for her. So I don't think her, based on what she gave you in your interview with her, I don't think her marriage crumbled because their issue was tribal.
Mm.
That's my assessment of their relationship.
I mean, that's...
I
have the same feeling because if he had... He could have been from any other tribe, really. And probably what he would have needed to protect her from were not tribal, cultural based, it could have been anything else. But because he was kind of like aloof to her sentiments about what was going on in the house, then she had to go through what she did. And it could have been from literally anyone from any other tribe,
yeah,
that particular one. But the things that you guys mentioned, that she mentioned, some of them are true. Yeah,
like the cultural practices of through the thing of relatives and so inheritance.
I don't remember. I have a very short memory of my life where it was just parents and siblings in the house.
Mm.
Yeah, we had relatives come and go, and maybe because at the time that's how I grew up. I grew up thinking that's normal.
Mm-hmm.
So much later, you come to realize, oh, by the way, there are people who have lived their entire lives in their homes. It's just their parents and
siblings
and their the siblings. I don't have that. I was brought up by cousins who I don't even know how we are related. Like, you know, they're always around. The thing with the brother being in the bedroom, that's strange.
Mm.
The extreme.
It's strange. I don't think that's proper, because I know there are things to do with wife inheritance, and there are rules to these things. It's not just any brother, for instance. It has to be the younger one. The elder cannot inherit the wife of the younger.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah, you inherit upwards, not downwards. But it has rules. The person has to be dead, you know, before you inherit.
It has to be a ceremony.
Yeah, like there has to be a whole ceremony.
Does the wife have to consent?
The only time when anything sexual could happen is when, for instance, if the husband is unable to say our children, mm-hmm. and then the other guy is brought in. So it's not just at there is a living room, but then let's have this meeting in the bedroom. That doesn't sound like that should happen.
So what's your background? You said, first of all, I'd like to know if we all grew up in the city, because I feel like there's a difference between the people who grew up out of the city, because out of the city, people are more and more, by and large, grouped by tribe in this country.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in Nairobi, so tribalism did not occur to me until my early 20s, when I was dating a Luo for on and off for 8 years, you know. So that's when my parents would be like, hey, you know, if you go that side, are you ready? Those kind of things. Those aunties would say things, and I'm like, hiya. And then even him on his side, the last round, because we were on and off, he came and told me, listen, now if we're getting married, we have to tell the folks now.
Yeah.
Let's not get emotionally invested, and then we get disappointed, because he had previously been in a relationship with, I believe she was a Kalenjin lady, and he was rejected as a Luo man from pursuing her father.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Where did you have any idea? How did you grow up, and how did your ideas around intertribal dating and or tribalism evolve?
I grew up in Kisumu, which is actually quite different from growing up in Shags. So when I'm in Nairobi and I say I'm going to Kisumu, people say I'm going to Shags. That's a whole city by itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's predominantly Luo, but it is very metropolitan. So growing up in Kisumu, there were a lot of intertribal marriages, including Kikuyu. There was in 2007 when now everything went tits up. The people who suffered were Kikuyus, because there were so many people who had come in and set up businesses.
Mm.
There was even this this hotel, this club that's called Kimwa, and it was owned by a Kikuyu guy whose children did not even know Kikuyu, they knew Luo. You know, but then when, you know, politics happened, politics is what triggers most of these conflicts. So there was a lot of intertribal marriages. But back home in Siaya, it was not very common. But what would be common is probably like our neighbors being the Luya. You know, that was very common back in Shags, because we basically share borders. And that's not strange. But in Kisumu, on the other hand, that was normal.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was not so strange that you married outside your tribe. But I will say that even as we grow up, the people, like our parents, are of a different generation. And they had their own issues with other tribes mm-hmm. that us, we didn't have. And like I told you, Kisumu, where you grew up, we were just basically in a metropolitan with different tribes. But we would always be told things about other tribes that you grow up later on and you realize. And even them, they tell you things that they're told about us. Mm-hmm. And then you grow up and you're like, yes, it is based on a truth. But then this truth has been manipulated so mm-hmm. much. And, you know, like, they don't have the full context of these cultural practices. So as they say, some of these things are based off on, you know, hearsay, rumors, and maybe experience, one, two experiences over here, you know, about people. For instance, we were being told, if you marry Kikuyu,
yeah,
atamka siku moja and aende na watoto na mali yako yote, you know.
Really?
Yeah, that was, in fact, that was the most common thing we were told about marrying Kikuyu.
But we will.
I don't know if it is true.
Guys, we need to translate that for international listeners.
So we were told if you marry a Kikuyu, she will wake up one day and disappear with your kids and all your property.
Yeah,
I mean, it has happened.
True,
you know, it has happened. I'm sure there are stories about it, but you can't like blanket all of it.
But why did she leave?
Yeah.
You know, like what was maybe there was an issue.
I don't.
I'm so curious. Well, what are the other things you were told about Kikuyu? Yeah, because we hear
back then it wasn't like a serious thing.
Right,
it was just that Kikuyus are thieves.
Yeah, Kikuyus are thieves. Yeah, we've had the stereotype.
If it is to put it bluntly, it is that right? That Kikuyus are thieves. But
even the women,
yeah, especially
the biggest thieves.
Listen, I would rather we talk about these stereotypes here, make light of them, because right. when we are so scared of mm-hmm. them, we give them power.
Yeah,
Akikuyu so thieves, no, they are entrepreneurial. They are hustlers.
It's a fine line.
With other people's property. But, I mean, as we were told.
Who knows?
Even as we were told, please.
Yeah. And then, on the other hand, there is this thing that is constantly said about Luos, that we sleep with the dead.
Okay. Yeah. What? Necrophilia.
It's for real? It's not true. It's not true that you're made to sleep with the dead when your husband dies.
Yeah.
No. It's we because of the way modernity happened, someone has passed away. We have to see that the person has passed away. Atachukulua, they'll be brought from Nairobi.
You're speaking your language. Yeah, right?
They'll be brought from Nairobi, taken home. Yeah. And they'll spend, typically, someone will spend there will be like a vigil with the body in the house.
Okay.
Right? So when you go to bed, that person is there. And then
sleep
the next
with
day.
The dead.
Yeah. We don't have sex with them. But you see, when people say, you sleep with
direct translation.
Dead, like, what do you mean?
Is
because
true?
that's what is said.
Right.
And sleep I've had that so many times. And let's not even get into like funeral rites and whatnot. Because I know for Luos and Luyas, it's a bit elongated. Mm-hmm. Other people, someone dies next day, 2 days they're buried. You're like, what? You didn't like this guy? Or
yeah.
You know, for us, it has to be a whole celebration of life.
Yeah.
Baka disco matanga and everything.
Disco matanga.
So,
is it true?
Disco
matanga. I have so many questions. Let me just finish. Yeah. I've
remembered. Disco matanga is the one thing that I think throws people out.
What's disco matanga?
Disco matanga.
It's where you guys, all of
yeah.
they do that.
You have a bash, but there's a lot of sex.
Oh, the yes, party. There is usually sex.
A lot
the
of
party.
Sex because I heard that there's a lot of sex in the parties because somebody has died, so you're bringing them back to life.
Bana. It's just it's a bash.
Yeah.
And people like sex. You know, Musa Jakadala is there, or whoever it is that they will bring, there will be a hangler, people will be, you know, after the person has died. Mm-hmm. And he's been buried, right? So after that, it is normal to have a disco matanga.
Yeah.
To enjoy
Celebrate.
To celebrate.
Me, you know, me when I die, you have to have
actually,
bash.
It even helps you, like, you know, just
get over the grief.
Yeah, kidogo, you know. I mean, after 3 days, you will be back thinking about the dead, but for, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Because so, there's that wailing, you go through the wailing, and then you go to, you do the bash.
You mourn for, like, for so long, and then the mourning period ends, and then life has to move on.
Yeah.
No. But utapata, at that point, now is when village girls are coming out. You know, they're allowed to go. You said you're going to the funeral. And
it's a bash.
And it's a bash. Boys are there.
Yeah.
Kuna mtu amekuja na has kutoka Nairobi ama watu alihaya school bus kutoka sijui wapi. And then, you know, people are like, why not? That back seat looks comfortable.
Yeah, I was told, is it true that if I, let's say I was married to a Luo, like I was married to you, and then I die in the mortuary, I have to be buried with a panty because actually this is not even my story. This is Esther's story. Esther told me this yesterday. She told me because there's one time she, like, I don't want to get into detail, but she told me that this is what she observed. That when a woman would pass away, she has to be buried with her panty, and the relatives have to come and check, because apparently if she's not, it was the belief that if the surviving husband has a new wife, it'll block her ability to have a baby.
What?
I'm hearing that from you. If it is true, but you see, if you're talking about funeral rites, back before underwears were invented,
yeah.
Were they, maybe there might be like something that was there before about burying naked, but okay. I don't know anything about specifically
the
underwear.
Panty. Okay.
You know.
Esther,
Alikipitia, man. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry for
to
Esther.
To her, yeah. And now she has kids who are now half Kamba and half Luo, and she's still trying to find ways to connect her kids to her dad's side. I want to know from Dez, how did your idea? Because me, I can tell you how mine started, but I don't want to start talking before you guys talk. How did your ideas around tribalism and intertribal dating and or marriage evolve over time?
Well, born and raised in Nairobi.
Yeah.
Tribalism. Okay, so I left the country at a young age and went to the States. And there, Kenyans band together because we were Kenyans, and the tribal thing was never a thing because we were so isolated that being amongst Kenyans by itself was such a privilege that what side of the tracks you came from or what tribe you were from were completely incidental. Now we're here for a common experience as Kenyans living in America. So the idea of would you date someone, say, in a foreign country who is Kenyan on the basis, or not date them, on the basis of tribe, never actually came into play. So that became my experience. So even having moved back to Kenya, it's very irrelevant. Actually, it's just about your temperament that is more important than your tribe. And also, in addition to that, a cousin of mine, my first cousin, my Mzee's elder brother's daughter, she lives in Canada. She did a genealogy test and she was so shocked at the results that she sent an entire email to the whole family.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you guys think we're cukes? Shock on you. So it turns out, at least from our Wazee's side, that most of our blood is actually Oromo, then Maasai, and then Kikuyu.
Mm.
The percentage-wise.
Oromo. Yes. Oromo is Kushites.
Yes.
Kushites. Oromo, yeah. Damn. I only saw that in like...
But then when I look, okay, I take more after my mom, so you wouldn't see it. I mean, you look at my sister,
yeah,
for sure. You'd look, you'd be like, that one.
There's some Kushites.
Yeah, there's that very,
okay.
It's those features of the way you look at some Ethiopians and be like, yeah, you guys, yeah. So I say this to say so many people, especially Nairobi, are mixed with Maasai and...
Especially Kikuyus and Maasai.
Yes.
Because this was their land, right? Nairobi was their Maasai land.
The land of sweet water, the cool water, Nairobi. And then, you know, Wayne Kileleshwa, you know, that's it's a Maasai name. So,
oh.
Yeah. So when you look, you identify based on a community, but you're genetically not necessarily that thing. Mm. So a lot of people, it's like African Americans, you know, they did a genealogy test on African Americans, and sorry to segue into something entirely different.
It's related, I promise.
It is related. So they found out that a lot of the slaves who were men were castrated. So you come into the plantation farm, say you're the Mr. Johnson, and there are a lot of Johnsons, mm-hmm. Mr. Jackson, there are a lot of black Jacksons. You know, those were plantation owners. Those guys would castrate the males. So who would have sex with the female black women?
The slave owners.
Exactly. So you really are paternalistically a Johnson. You really are.
Mm.
So when they looked at their lineage, you find most of them are Scottish, they're Vikings, they have so much European blood. But on the surface, they look black.
Mm.
So I would argue that a lot of people, especially in Nairobi, because you talked about where did you, because you're also, your question was laced with the idea of where did you grow up? Because if you didn't grow up in Nairobi, that if you grew up in the village, you'd be more culturally biased than people who grew up in Nairobi. Because in Nairobi, you have that hodgepodge of
difference
of cultures and bloodlines, to the point where just because you identify with a group doesn't necessarily mean that you really are.
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, my mom, who is from Murang'a, grew up in Nairobi because my wuka, my grandfather, worked at Kenya Railways. So she grew up in Nairobi. She's a Nairobi chick. Her elder siblings are from Murang'a because they grew up there. But by the time my grandfather worked in Nairobi is when my mom and her younger sister were coming up. So she speaks fluent Luo.
Really?
She's fluent Luo and Kikuyu and whatever, but she doesn't identify with Murang'a as her shags. Nairobi is her shags. So then she married a guy from Lokabete, who is right behind Loresho.
Mm-hmm.
So our shags for us was going home at 4 o'clock for tea. We go and see my shoshu after school. That's how close shags is for me. So the idea that you can gravitate back to being somewhat identifying culturally and being in a homogeneous environment in which you're segregating yourself from your neighbors who are a different tribe just seems ridiculous. So no, I never grew up with that stigma. In fact, for me, it's really a case of, are we aligned in how we think and what are our common experiences, be it as Kenyans, Africans, or just humanity more so than what language and what do you subscribe to on a village basis?
I think
on a village basis.
Really your tribe is really it's a survival strategy. If you are, say, a pastoralist and you guys are nomads, if you're not going to adhere to that, you'll be left
but
the wilderness.
And while I hear you and I agree, like in theory, mm-hmm. but to sort of answer on my behalf, I feel like I definitely don't believe that I date in tribal lines. I'm not married, but I don't think I date in tribal lines. But when this topic came up and I was looking at my dating history, Kikuyus, I think 80%, 90%, and then the others that are not Kikuyu were, there was a Ugandan guy and a French guy.
Can I answer that question?
So what I'm trying to say is maybe we might not with our chest be like, I'm dating, you know, mm-hmm. on tribal lines, mm-hmm. but I do think we've been programmed to date what is familiar, because at least for me, my dad is Kikuyu, my mom is Kikuyu.
Okay.
And the question of, like, when did I interact with tribalism the first time? It's always whenever there's elections. That's when I'm suddenly reminded of, oh, I'm Kikuyu. And like, there is this sort of, you know, divide that you don't go to the other side, whether it's dating, voting, mm-hmm. like that's when there's
argue that what you said is more poignant, which is you date what's familiar.
Exactly.
Hold on. What mm-hmm. you've been dating, what is familiar in Nairobi, if you were to throw a dart at from the sky to hit someone in Nairobi, what tribe would they be?
Kikuyu?
Exactly.
Also, you're saying it's a population.
It's a statistical issue that you're dealing with more so than a bias on your part.
So you think there's more Kikuyus?
Like I said, my shags is 5 minutes away.
But me, I was not necessarily dating here in Nairobi. I was also in the UK. I dated a Kikuyu guy there. I have a history of Kikuyu. Dating Kikuyu guys. But I think it's familiarity in the sense that, okay, not even familiar. I just think, even if I think of my friends right now,
mm-hmm.
I think I have 80%, like, you might be my relative friends like that, but like, I don't know that I have non-Kikuyu friends. I mean, I don't know people's tribes that deeply, to be very honest, but I do think...
I think it's incidental.
I don't think, like, I definitely know that if you tell me, Sharon, who are your Kikuyu friends, I can give you a long list. If you say to me, Sharon, who is your Luo friend, I'd have to really sit and think, who is that? And that for me is why I'm like, I think we might not be saying we're dating people tribally with our chest, but I do think we are, even the people we're exposed to, the people that are around us, we do interact in tribal lines. I think it's just, it's almost programming.
That's interesting.
Like, I think you have to be intentional to go outside of your tribal lines in this sort of, in our day and age. Like, I have to say, I'm only dating Luo men. Then now I start looking, okay, there's Magunga over there, there's the Omondi over there. Like, I think you have to go out of your way.
I think you are, by definition, not you specifically, but humanity is drawn to what you notice. So again, right. If you notice, if I say red cars, you can then go you home seeing and you'll notice them and you'll see them. So yep. if you allow yourself to subconsciously see a certain characteristic in people, you will start being attracted to them even subconsciously. So I think for you, maybe your experiences, even living abroad, is that those are the only people or demographic that you've had in your subconscious that you're drawn to.
And also there's that stereotype, not a stereotype, but like for me, when I think about dating tribally, it's the stereotypes of, you know, Luo men spend more money on their girlfriends or wives. Like they spoil, you know, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but like there's that stereotype. And whereas it's known that if you're dating a Kikuyu, they're not gonna...
You're not gonna get nothing.
You'll just get vibes and love.
You'll be taking to Karomaido to eat meat or to Jogona.
And, you know, I had a theory once.
Wow. So as in defense of Kikuyu man, since I'm the only one here on the diocese, Kikuyu man, I firmly reject that. I think... If you meet, hold on. If you meet a particular person whose priorities, even if it's a Luo or a Luya or whatever the case may be, whose priorities are to impress and to spoil someone, say, at the expense of everything else, then that'll be their priority. Mm-hmm. But you will seldom find that if this Kikuyu guy that you're saying is stingy and whatever, you will find that A, everything that maybe he's using in terms of his resources are going towards the betterment.
Yeah, it's
of
like a long term. Yeah, yes. I get that.
So it depends on your short term and long term objectives.
No, some of them are just stingy.
I agree.
Making it sound so noble.
Like, seldom do you find.
I've dated a Luo guy. I've dated a Kikuyu guy. I've also dated Taita, Kamba. So me, I have been there. I am the rainbow of the country. But those, for me, the stereotypes started to come in when I was at that marrying age, like 23, 24 there. I honestly did not care about tribe. In fact, let me go to where I'm trying to get at. We seem to be talking about Luo Kikuyu. That's like the biggest comparison that we are seeing.
The two men on the dais.
Eh? Oh yeah, the Luo and the Kikuyu man, yes. But like,
supposed that Kikuyu.
Where did this tension? Does anyone have any idea tension began?
The tension is all, as he said, is all political.
It's all political.
I would say pre-independence, that, and I think our founding father made an egregious error in not laying the foundation for a country that works on a tribal level and allocates resources equally. And I think access to capital, opportunities, and being embraced would have been the first thing. Like, for instance, Julius Nyerere, his approach was to suppress tribal differences and you make Swahili and being Tanzanian the paramount thing, which is why Tanzanians don't identify on a tribal basis. Mm-hmm. We could have actually done the reverse, because I think our diversity is actually our strength. We could have actually have celebrated our differences and actually brought, I think our cultural differences are only there because of ignorance. So Esther didn't know what Luo traditions are like because she didn't know. Had she grown up in an environment or in a Kenya from 1963 that was embracive of Luo culture to Kambas, and the reverse equally being true. So even if we picked, like, African Americans have, Black History Month, for the whole month of February, you celebrate Black culture. If we had Luo month, Kikuyu month, Luya month.
Okay, we have 42 tribes.
We'll have
our even if we just said 12 weeks.
Which 12 are you going to choose?
Just the biggest by demography. Even if you did that, fine.
Because we have 40 whatever
break tribes. Break it down however you please. Kikuyu, but the point is, had we just literally, to the point where government, schools, and radio and TV were all broadcast in that language, even the newspapers, and our folks' generation would be like, what the heck is this? But by the time we come up, we see it as completely normal. We know what itaras are and gurarios are and disco matangas. So to the point where when someone comes from a different quote-unquote tribe, we're like, we even start salimianing in their language. So what? So that should have been celebrated. And I think that's the missed opportunity we could have had.
Like in South Africa where they have 11 national languages and they pretty much know each other's languages. Yeah. I'm not quite familiar with the society and how they relate amongst themselves. But what I know is that there is more love for people of their own kind. But then they have a common enemy, which is, of course, the white domination.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. In Kenya, I would, not personally, I'm talking hypothetically, I would rather marry a white person than a Kikuyu. I would rather, there was this person who came on Twitter someday and said they were Luo, and actually at first I didn't get the nuance of what he was saying, probably consciously or unconsciously, but he was saying, let's promote Luo language, tell your children that a grandmother is not called Shosho, it's called Dani. And the maize and beans meal, it's not called Gideri, it's called Nyoyo. You know, it is, there are Luo words for these things, but because of modernity, all this, living in Nairobi and cultural exchange, then of course media and all these things, Gideri is much more prominent than Nyoyo, and Shosho, mother-in-law, you know, the show became, media has promoted a lot of Kikuyu words. So when he said that, I went straight to retweet. But then I did not read that down there where he said, you'd rather at least they learn English than learn Kikuyu. At that point, I was like, Ebu, step back. This is some colonial language that was forced on us, right? And you'd rather they learn that as opposed to learn another African language. But what is the genesis of that? You'd rather this than that. It goes to politics. It goes to pre-independence.
Post-independence.
It's actually pre. With the, I forget his name, Ofafa Jericho. What's his name? I keep forgetting. The guy who was assassinated, and then that started causing problems between
Tomboy,
Kikuyus and Luos.
Kikuyus and Luos. Then it goes into 1963 between Kenyatta and Odinga One.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, of course, assassination of Tomboya, Robert Uko. Now things just go downhill from there.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. And then it all breaks out, like it all blows up in 2007. Yeah. Because at the head was a Kikuyu person, Kibaki and Raila. So if it wasn't for that political climate, would you still, or would this person still have said what he said?
Probably
about
not.
Yes,
probably not.
And that feeds into now that when that kind of hatred is spread, it's not spread politically and it ends in politics. It seeps into our cultural our social interaction. So there are people who they were taught, yeah, their grandfathers went somewhere and swore some blood.
And did what?
Some blood oath.
Took an oath. Yeah.
Took an
blood
oath.
A Kikuyu oath.
Yeah.
Mau oath.
Yeah. And they would never, ever look at me and say, that this guy is I would vote for this guy, or I would marry this this guy, or I would want my child to.
Mm.
You know, there are people who are hardliners like that. And similarly on this other side, no. Because of tension. Now, the thing that you said, you said, why is it only Luos and Kikuyus? I don't know if there is another duality in Kenya,
mm-hmm.
that has
rivalry,
that kind of
And the reason, because I don't know, even the things you're mentioning, the assassination of, I actually don't know how this came to be. Maybe I need to do some research. Especially because
Failure of 844.
Sawa.
Malkiyat Singh really did us wrong.
How Kikuyus, why Kikuyus and Luos have attention? I didn't even know that in school. They didn't teach us that.
No,
I came to learn about these things when I started going for plays and stuff. And I'm like, wait, because I was like looking at it geographically, Kikuyus are in central Kenya, Luos are in western Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
There is no point in time, even in the history of this country before the white man came, that we were interacting. We did not share a border. There's no time we were fighting for resources. There's no time, and I was even trying for me. If anything, Kikuyu should really be beefing with Maasai's, because they had a lot of beef. Yes, they did intermarrying. They were friends and they're not friends. But if anything, that would make sense. One is a Nilot, one is a Bantu. But now with Luos and Kikuyus, I'm always just like, where does this come from?
It's politics.
And yes, it goes back to access to resources. And it goes back to modern industrial culture of jobs, opportunities, government tender. I mean, everything to do with how you can essentially run a nation, and the pride of a people who have a representative from their community being at the helm of that control is where it's all politically based. And politically, that now transcended into allocation of resources to different communities. That's really what it was down to.
And I feel like,
in fact, if anything, people like Obama Senior, when he moved back to Kenya, felt extremely ostracized by not feeling included as part of the revolutionary process in post-independent Kenya. Yet he was a child of the airlift. So he benefited from all of those kinds of programs that came in from the West. But when he came back home, mm-hmm. he was not brought in as an asset, was never meant to feel like,
because
an asset.
Kikuyus were in power?
Correct.
You know, I feel like our parents' generation, their tribal lines were, political. But I feel like the other generation, because we're not that politically charged, I don't speak for everyone, but...
Ooh, we are.
I mean, we are. But let's say for the city, some people in the certain parts of the city aren't as politically charged in the sort of millennial demographic, and I think they date tribally because of that point I made earlier, which is a Kikuyu guy will behave this way when you're dating him or marrying him, and a Luo man will behave this way. It's not necessarily political, it's like lifestyle,
it's cultural,
but like it's tied to politics, because at the end of the day, why are you able to spend more if you know, like, there's mm-hmm. connections there. But I also
Luos dress better.
Yeah, there's a I feel like Luos are like Nigerians in a way. Like, they have a similar voice. And for sure, they have a similar voice.
I know,
dress.
They do. We've talked. Yeah. They do. Luos are Nigerians. I feel similar like voice when I went to Lagos, I was like, this is
for
like
sure.
This guy is full of Luos.
Yeah, it's full of Luos.
To what you're saying, mm-hmm. I don't know why we think that these people who live in, you know, these urban areas, like let's say the Kileleshwas, Kilimanis, mm-hmm. and Karens, I don't know why we think that for whatever reason that kind of exposure they've had or education or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
that they don't act tribally. My experience has been completely different. You wait until it is siasa season, and
elections.
You will see just mm-hmm. how you follow somebody, and you will see what kind of thing that they're going to, the kind of things they're saying, because at that time everyone is charged. Outside of that, people are not charged. You see, there is not much particular tension.
It's interesting you say that.
But I was going to say that we underestimate the power of, you know, decades of demonizing each other, what it does to mm-hmm. subsequent generations. Those people had their reason, yeah? But then it seeped down through generations to today. Utapata. Yeah. There are people who are like 16, 17 years old. They were not even probably that conscious when 207 was happening. They maybe knew, they saw it, mm-hmm. but they didn't understand it fully. Yeah, and that is just 207. Leave alone everything else before that. But they just grow up knowing that this is the tribe you can marry and this is the tribe you can't marry. They can't explain it, but that is what
Let me interject and tell you, have you seen the social experiment where they get three people in a room and they're actors who've been told, whenever you hear a bell, you stand up. The bell goes off again, you sit down. Mm. And then they keep bringing people in, and those who don't stand up are removed. And those who do stand up and sit down on the bell are kept. And then they eventually fill the whole room. Mm-hmm. When they fill the room with people who are compliant, the three actors who know why they're doing it are removed and everyone continues.
Yeah.
So I'd argue that when you talk about intergenerational biases, that they don't even know where it's stemming from.
Yep.
It's because they've been conditioned in a way that those who had reason are not even there anymore. Mm-hmm. So we need, the blessing is a new generation with now technology being a part of a new generation's culture, would hopefully begin to remove and not exacerbate these differences that are really completely unfounded and are from a bygone era. Mm. So it's really incumbent on those who lived the life of, we talked about vinyl on your intro to streaming. Yeah. Those who, like us, who have been there from 8 tracks to streaming, who can understand an analog life in my life to a completely digital time, to be this conduit for people who are now coming up to realize that this is actually stupidity. But I think they do, but they don't know why they have these. They're subconscious, like the way Sharon was talking about, even when in the UK she's still only dated. You don't even know why you're doing it.
I was very surprised when you said your circles is mostly Kikuyu, and yet you live this metropolitan life, you meet all kinds of people. I don't know what tribe of people are in this room behind the screens, but I mean, you probably don't know, but you interact with people from everywhere in your daily life. But for then maybe you need to interrogate why your close circle is full of Kikuyus and not people from any other tribe.
Do you know what yours is, your group of friends?
Is it a mix? I have a lot of Kikuyus. Honestly, So,
are you married to a Kikuyu?
Funny? No.
Okay.
Actually, yes. She is Kalenjin Kikuyu.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I was going to get into that. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, we are shooting this on Friday.
Yeah.
On Sunday is my 1 year anniversary.
Oh, congrats.
Now, when I look back at my wedding lineup, there is no other Luo except Brian Babu, who was my best
person. Best man, yeah.
Yes. So everyone else is predominantly actually Kikuyu, not Luo.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I have more friends outside my tribe than I do within my tribe.
Yeah.
It was not intentional. It was not intentional. It just so happened to be.
Question, who is the Kale in her family?
Her dad.
Her dad.
Yes.
Was there any resistance?
Interesting question.
Yes.
There's a reason I asked that question.
Okay.
What's the reason?
Because the purveyors and the identification of children and culture is women. So if her mom was the Kikuyu, it's called mother tongue for a reason. She's really more Kikuyu. Culturally, even though she might be identified with a Kalenjin homestead, the mother... which church did you get married in? Yours or hers?
Not church.
Okay.
It was a civil wedding.
Civil wedding. Odds are, had you done a church wedding, it wouldn't have been yours. It would have been hers.
Oh, okay.
The religion of your children is probably her religion.
Mm-hmm.
So the only thing you as a male would be doing is providing and protecting with the swag, the low swag. But
and investments, please. Yeah. Don't just
But the language and the culture of the children is always maternal. Mm. So if her mother is Kikuyu, she's a Kikuyu, culturally speaking.
Well, I don't know about any of that. So that is where I was going to, that's the other point I was going to go to, about when people get married, how do you then decide?
Yeah, which
if you
culture?
Have children, are they going to be Luo? Are they going to be Kikuyu? Are they going to be Kalenjin? Are they going to be what? So I think luckily for us, that's not a big deal. Yeah. Even at the wedding, we tried to incorporate, it was a very African wedding, actually. We tried to incorporate all the cultures. I told her, you come as my bride, but I want to see both your Kalenjin and your Kikuyu. I'm Luo through and through, all the way back. Actually, yeah, I will come as a Luo, right? So when you look at the pictures, I am dressed in this whole Luo thing, and then she had to change her ornaments and some stuff in between.
That's so
just
dope.
To celebrate all both kinds cultures. Of things. Yeah. So when it comes to raising the kids, I don't think it's a big deal for me that they grow particularly as Luo, mm-hmm. but I would want them to learn the language.
All the language, the three?
Yes, I would want them to embrace the language and the culture. So if it is important to her that her culture is also passed on to the kids,
children, yeah.
then I won't stand in the way. However, on the other hand, there are people who, and this is the reason, people always assume that actually the reason why people don't want to marry people from other tribes is simply out of hatred. It's not always that.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's just easier, you know. If you are a Kikuyu, marrying a Kikuyu, your cultures align, it is easier. You don't have to, there's no shock, like in Esther's case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when someone dies, when you get married, when a child is born,
yeah, like
you
the
don't
norms
have
are the
to
same.
Have those conflicts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For instance, if you have kids, Kikuyus have a very strict way of naming. Nezengia Mali, and you say, hi, Wamboi, and then if it's a homestead, then it's like 10 Wamboi's are yeah. turning around.
It's a naming system.
Yeah, so yeah. Then you have to, the firstborn has to be, if it's a boy, it has to be the dad
yeah.
on the side, mom, yeah. and then goes.
Oh, you guys don't
like
do that.
That,
eh?
No, we don't.
Okay.
You can if you want to, mm-hmm. but we name after everything. You can name after a prominent person. You can name, that's why there's so many Raila Odingas and Nelson Mandelas and Sankaras. And
Obamas.
Yeah.
And Obamas.
And Biko.
Yes, yeah. Steve Biko. Yes,
Steve Biko,
those
yeah.
ones you'll find them in Luland a lot.
Yeah.
You can name after the season.
See, like Nigerians, person. Happiness, yeah. joy.
If you're born Miracle. During the day, at night, whatever, that's your name. You can be named after an ancestor. You can be named so long as maybe anything that reflects how the parents felt like or what the situation was like at birth. If you're born during time of war, there is a name for that. You know, so you can choose. But then imagine now someone who is Luo married to someone who is Kikuyu and everyone wants to stick to their
conventions. Yeah.
You can do both. So
you
don't, I don't think you have to choose.
You can do both.
Oh, I see
but
what you mean,
believe
but, like,
you me,
it's hard.
Many people do not want
to go through that.
To go through all that. So I will not immediately judge someone if they say I'm Luo and I want to marry a Luo.
Mm.
Yeah, I will not immediately judge you for that. But if you say you're Luo and you want to marry a Luo because Kikuyus are thieves, then maybe a side eye. And where is that coming from? And then if it has no basis, then
yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, people shouldn't be worried about people who think like that. Just like flat earthists, they'll eventually leave this planet. So, you know, we can't build our civilization based on the stupidity and biases and ignorance of the people who think the earth is flat, so to speak. So if you think that all people can be painted with one brush, your time on this planet is limited. We're not worried about you.
Okay, I want us to wrap up this conversation. I feel like I'm actually shocked at the timer. I thought we were like maybe 20 minutes in. I think we are over an hour in. There's so much I wanted us to talk about. I wanted to find out if you experienced some resistance marrying a Kikuyu Kalenjin. I wanted to talk about what are the kind of decisions you make or think about when you're looking for a partner, especially around tribe. Do these things cross your mind? We might have to do a part two of this. I don't know. You guys can tell us in the comment section. I want us to finish the conversation by also inviting our audience to let us know what they think about this conversation. I really, really, really loved Dez's idea or suggestion of celebrating culture, because then it stops making it fearful, difference so fearful, and so much resistance of, oh, you guys do this, that's weird, you know, it's making it less making it not uncomfortable. You know what I mean?
Making it part of your own culture now.
Making it part of your own culture, having awareness of it, and, you know, what do you guys think about that? How would you say moving forward, we should do this? Because even if I marry somebody from a different tribe, I don't want my kids to lose both cultures. That we say, no, in this house, we only speak English because we don't want tribalism. No, I want them to know about Kikuyu culture. I want them to know about Luo culture. You know what I mean? How do we do it as this generation moving forward so that we can hopefully find a healing for this country with this very deep rooted issue? So I hope everyone has exhausted what they can say in this short period of time. I want us to end this episode. If you've made it so this far into the conversation, thank you so much. Hopefully you'll join us next time, and as per usual, it's related. I promise. Magunga,
promise.
It's related.
I promise, listen, it's related. Sour.
Thank you guys, we'll see you guys next time. Bye.